I don't like this business of preaching to fans.
Calm down, Greg. It's soccer. It's soccer.
You know anything else about soccer?
Not much. All I know is I got a lot of balls.
You know, it doesn't matter if you're in the stadium watching a game on TV. It's just the guy's not good enough. The guy is just not good enough.
Simon, I don't know if you're big into New Year's resolutions, but, you know, wondering if maybe you pledged to come out of your shell a little bit in 2015.
Kind of pisses me off, to be honest.
That's why he's here!
Welcome to Extra Time Radio on SiriusXM Channel 94 and MLSsoccer.com. What?
I'm like on a high right now. Almost 24 hours after that CCL final game, and I'm like, we just started talking about it, and I'm already back where I was yesterday. And you come in soft like that.
The first leg happened in Mexico City. Can I tell you that my experience was a strange one around this game? Montreal goes down to Mexico City. They tie Club America 1-1 when most people thought they would absolutely get destroyed in front of a sold-out crowd, over 100,000, all that. I would love to count that crowd. I mean,
well,
it doesn't
that's Azteca,
feel like 100,000.
But that's Azteca Stadium. Even when it's Mexican national team, there's those seats around around the field that never look full.
I think it's legend. It's legend that there's 100,000 people in there. But regardless, they go down and it's 1-1. And here's why it was a strange experience for me. So they're off to a great start. They have the away goal. They have the edge. They have two results that can go their way now in the second leg next Wednesday at the Big O, which will also be sold out. So I was watching the game, and that is the least nerve-wracking I've ever been watching an MLS team with that much at stake.
Yeah. Why?
And it was just, it just felt like, and maybe this is me getting used to seeing Montreal Impact in these CCL matches, Champions League matches, that they're calm, they're composed, they're organized, and nothing about them, they don't get frazzled at all in this. And so I'm watching the game, and, you know, usually I have the butterflies, and you're nervous, and but they get the goal, and then I was just as calm as can be.
Even with certain refereeing calls or maybe play decisions by Piatti.
You're always looking at the refereeing. So they get the early goal, Montreal does, through Ignacio Piatti, who, by the way, I know you have to have him on the field for the goals that he can score. But during the game, I was shouting at my TV, but only because of Piatti.
Yeah.
There were so many times where you wanted him to get the ball and just be a release valve for the team.
Yeah.
To hold the ball.
Yeah.
Ball comes to him, and he lost it so many times, or he couldn't hold it.
Oh, I disagree, but okay.
Oh, absolutely. He was so frustrating. So he's the guy I thought they would take off eventually. We'll get into the subs later, but I just wasn't – it wasn't a game of worry for me. Maybe it's the way they started, where they were knocking it around. They were confident. The crowd was not into it.
Yeah.
But they were just composed all around.
What the one thing that I think has made them so good in this tournament is when they sit back, when they get possession, they're very efficient with it. They connect one or two passes and get themselves out of tight spaces. Then from there, no, they don't get a shot on goal every time. But Damo Duro was playing, you know, some clean passes throughout that game back to goal. He did some nice things. Nigel Rio-Coker, I thought, was very, very good throughout this game. Callum Mallis is unbelievable. Okay, I know. I don't trust you on any Callum Mallis because
did I not tell you?
You
guys,
couldn't remember his name to start the whole thing.
Okay, I couldn't remember because he's been on the bench for I don't know why he's been on the bench for so long. But thankfully, Frank Klopas now is going to be playing him regularly. There's no chance that you'll see him not play moving forward. I mean, he was fantastic.
He switches the field. It's like it's not even an issue for him. It's like a 45-yard ball across the field, puts it on a guy's foot every single time. Now, part of that, him playing, is when you look at this team, and I can't imagine anyone out there who, if you're not rooting for them because you're an MLS fan and you're rooting for MLS, and you're not rooting for them because they're Canada and you're Canadian, or you're not rooting for them because they're playing against the Mexican team and you dislike Mexico, the underdog story, the fact that they're missing Justin Mapp, missing Cameron Porter, Ayango, no one knows where in the world he is. Eric Alexander is cap-tied. They've found these guys out of nowhere who then go down injured.
Not cap-tied.
He's not allowed to cup-tied. Sorry. Yeah, he's not cap-tied. They find these guys out of nowhere, and yet they're still able to put these performances together. With Callum Mallis, Andres Romero came back from the dead and scores on the road in Costa Rica and played well again yesterday when it looked like he had really hurt himself.
The front
early
office,
in the
that
game.
Was a weird one.
Yeah.
If you didn't see it, he jumped in midair without any contact whatsoever from another player. And the commentators on the Spanish language broadcast were talking about how he did that to avoid tearing up his knee. His foot gets stuck, his leg gets stuck in the turf, and he just contorts in a very weird way. But when I see this team, look, the player personnel department for the Montreal Impact has taken some flack in recent years. And you had Nick DeSantis, who was moved out of the role of sporting director. But you'd have to say that looking at this, the team that's been assembled, no wonder they're good in these circumstances, because you have a Laurent Simon, who was, to me, the man of the match for them. So calm and collected. You have Nigel Riococo with Premier League experience. You have Dom Oduro, who's played for the Ghana national team. You have Bakary Soumaré, who's played in France, as well as Hassoum Kamara. You have guys who've been around the block, and they're not. Andres Romero has played in front of big crowds in Argentina. So,
which is also, I think,
Piatti, obviously.
Well, that's where I think Piatti stays on the field in situations like this. By the way, back to your earlier point, because he has that ability to draw fouls. He can get the ball on his foot, and he can draw a guy in, pick up a foul, and knows how to use his body to make sure the referee sees it and relieve a little bit of pressure. But those guys you just said, a few of those guys, Riococo, Soumaré, Kamara, were guys that everyone had already, like, they were done. To a lot of people that are MLS fans, a lot of people in the league, they didn't think those guys had futures anymore. So that's the credit to Montreal, that they saw the qualities that they wanted, and Frank Lopez has been able to, I mean, in the case of Nigel Riococo and Bakary Soumaré, resurrect their careers, I think.
The we'll get into the refereeing in a second, but we got to just say this off the bat. There's nothing accomplished yet, for Montreal. I mean, it's a good result, but because we've seen it happen with Real Salt Lake in 2011, how they went into Mexico, they got a draw, it didn't work out for them. And America's dangerous. I don't think we saw Arroyo and Quintero. They weren't. And Benedetto had an off day. I mean, he had four really good looks for America and didn't score. So they had their guys that weren't on their game, but they're still dangerous. And so this game is obviously all to be played for in Montreal on the 29th. But let's get to the red cards. And this would have influenced.
There were no red cards.
There were none. But I count three instances where a Club America player could have seen red.
So the obvious one to start out with is Dominic Odero gets played in by Piatti. It looks like he's in one-on-one on goal. And Martinez, the number 10,
Oswaldo
pulls
Martinez
on his jersey. And you can see the jersey stretch.
Yep.
And Odero goes down and the referee comes. It's a foul on top of the box, and he gives a yellow card for what looked like, I call it professional foul, you call it dogso, the
denial of an obvious goal-scoring opportunity.
But the referee's thought was that because it was a long touch from Odero, that he wasn't actually in on goal.
Did you see that written somewhere?
That's what I heard people were saying was the judgment.
Well, the other factor is that there was a defender that was fairly close to the play, another defender.
Yeah.
Yellow card was the way that one went. I think many of us all agree that it should have been red. But I would also point to a play in the first half as well. Ruben Sambuesa, he kicked out at Donny Toya on the end line.
Yeah.
And to me, that is violent conduct.
Yeah.
That should have been a red card. Clearly not picked up. And Sambuesa does that, I think, expecting to see Donny Toya retaliate. And Donny Toya, I think, did well to contain himself
and
there.
And Simon came over also and right in his ear.
Correct.
Said, we keep our
Don't
heads.
Fall for it.
Yeah.
And then the other one was in the 50th minute. Eric Pimentel, the central defender, he went in studs up on Ignacio Piatti. And I think the referee must have considered it incidental because he did not even issue a yellow card to him. So I thought that was a red card. Now, so those are three red cards I think could have happened for America. The other thing is that I thought there was a penalty for America. So I think Montreal got off easy. 41st minute. It looked like we didn't get a replay.
Yeah.
But it looked like a handball committed by Hassoum Kamara.
And the weird part for me was he was lenient on these cards. He was so quick to give Dili Duca a yellow card when he was coming off the field. Not as slow as I've ever seen a player subbed out in a winning team come off the field. He felt very quick to give out cards and calls at times, and then at other times was trying to keep himself composed and not get pushed to a red card when the player carries out a foul, he carries out the foul. It's not your fault as a referee. It's your job is to give the card that, and that's that would have been a huge changing point. The one thing that was tough in the end of the game was if they'd conceded in the 50th or 60th minute and tied 1-1, you would have left that game feeling, oh, wow, that was amazing. Because they conceded so late, there was that moment of they almost got out with a 1-0 victory, which would have been incredible.
The of the yellow cards that you mentioned that Montreal got, the one that's going to really carry the most weight is Evan Bush, the goalkeeper, who had a pretty good game in this one, made the key saves that you need him to make in this kind of setting, and he got a yellow card at the end. So America scored the goal, and then I think he was holding on because this was a replay they went to a couple minutes after the goal was scored. So you're like, what are you watching when they flashed it up on the screen? And it looked like Evan Bush was holding the ball and the America players wanted it back.
Yeah.
And
he punted it off the America player first, and then the America player slightly pushed him. So he grabbed his head and went down to the ground, which made me laugh.
So Evan Bush, because of that yellow card, he has to miss the second leg. And because of the fact that Eric Kronberg is cup tied with Sporting Kansas City in this competition, he can't play. And so they have a backup goalkeeper that they got from Edmonton who looks like he's going to have to start the game unless they can overturn on appeal this yellow card. My gut tells me it's a tough sell because, A, you hold on to the ball and – as you mentioned, you saw him kick it into an America player?
I think he just, when the America player is trying to get it from him, just goes to punt it and it hits him. I don't know if it's a blatant yellow card, but I don't think there's any.
It's the game.
There's nothing there that's going to have you overturn it. You could say don't give the call at the time. And also, so in all of this, the yellow cards don't reset going into the final.
Yeah, that was the weird one.
Yeah.
So, look, we'll get a little more clarity from our man on the ground there, Andrew Wiebe, the host of Extra Time Radio, who went out to Mexico City to enjoy this one. Andrew, can you go over this situation for us with Evan Bush?
Thank you, guys. I have not slept in more than 24 hours. So,
good. It'll make for a better interview. It'll make for a better interview. Tell us what happened on this Evan Bush situation. The team says they want to appeal it. Are there grounds based on what we saw? That wouldn't seem so.
Look, you know, I think honestly, you guys probably have a better idea than I do. I'm up in the press box in a 100,000-seat stadium. We were baffled during the game as to where that yellow card came from, as to what the circumstances were. We do know that Montreal are appealing the decision. I went back last night, 4 a.m. in the morning in Mexico City, watched the replay on Fox Soccer to go, and it looks like he's probably going to be suspended for this second leg. It did appear that he got the ball and may have kicked the ball back at Aguilar after a little dust up there in the box. An unfortunate scenario for Bush. He had kept his cool the entire game. He avoided that time-wasting yellow card that you thought might come as Montreal tried to hold on to a lead. In the end, I just think that CONCACAF is going to stick to their guns and we'll probably see the young gun in net. Remember, Kronberg, cup tied with Sporting KC, he cannot play in that second leg.
And the last question about it, Andrew, is does the yellow cards not reset going into the championship round in CCL?
No, it does not reset going into the final. It resets, I believe, before the quarterfinals and after the final, but it does not reset. So there's no easy way out for Bush here. He's got to take his medicine. And we saw it last night. I have to imagine he was pretty upset. He breezed right through that mix zone area. And we yelled for him. We tried to get comment from him, trying to find out what happened from his perspective. But we ended up with a bunch of secondhand accounts from all the different guys on the team. I don't think they saw it either. So we'll see what CONCACAF says. But if I was a betting man, I would say that Evan Bush will not play in that second leg.
So, Andrew, for a team that gave up a goal 2 minutes from the end here after having a lead basically the entire game, what was the vibe in that mix zone? What are we talking disappointment here, or were they happy?
I mean, I think they were definitely happy. They came in saying, let's get a result. And if you would have given them 1-1 before the game, they all would have taken it without even hesitating. But there was that sense of what could have been because – everyone who watched this game saw, and everyone who thought you were counting down those minutes, you were thinking, boy, this could be it. This could be a historic result. This could be against all odds for the Montreal Impact. Interesting enough, there is no clock at Estadio Azteca. It just says second half on the board. So I had my stopwatch out. I was timing it on my phone. I was seeing these minutes tick down, and I turned to Olivier Tremblay, our beat writer there in Montreal, and I said, these guys are going to make history. Right after that came the foul, and right after that came the goal. But I
you
think they
jinxed.
Were
Hold on, you was, jinxed
I
Montreal.
Did. I probably did.
Oh man,
I probably did. You know, I
Montreal
have
fans now know. No, Montreal fans now know who to blame. Look, I got a lot of stick back in 2011 when I said Real Salt Lake had it in the bag, and I got so much stick afterwards because people said because you said that we lost. So now you're getting
it. Well, hey, they haven't lost yet. They haven't lost yet. So the jinx is not there. Maybe the reverse jinx will come around and they'll take care of business in leg two. We'll see.
Andrew, take us into the stadium. They say 100,000, the altitude of the story. What was the atmosphere like at the start of the game? What was it like after Montreal scored? How did it feel going throughout the game? Did the fans turn on America at all?
Well, you know, here's the thing. They said 100,000. I can tell you with complete certainty that there were not 100,000 people in that stadium. I would put the number at probably between 75 and 85,000. There were large areas up in the upper deck that were not full. Some rumors maybe that tickets were given to resellers who couldn't resell them outside the stadium. Either way, it was still very, very packed. I would say that it became full just before halftime. You cannot underestimate the traffic headed to Estadio Azteca. We left 3 hours early, and we got there with about an hour and 15 until game time, if that tells you anything. So people were straggling in. And to be perfectly honest with you, it was pretty intimidating at the very beginning. But once Montreal showed that they had the ability to get on the ball and to do some things, and then when Piatti scored, it really quieted down. And they did not have that intimidating effect that you thought it might. Now, once Club America did score that goal late on, that was a 4 or 5 minute stretch of what I thought that stadium could be capable of. It was deafening. The people were into it. They were screaming. They were yelling. They were throwing beer cups. Fortunately for the Impact, they were really able to take the wind out of the sails of those fans. But it was one of the most special venues I've ever been in. The history there is incredible.
Did they flash lasers at you?
I did not get any lasers flashed at me. Had they known I was a jinx, they may have turned on me as well. They had no idea who I was. But that was interesting. Those lasers followed everybody around. Somewhere in Mexico City, they are selling a very powerful green laser, and those Azteca fans are definitely picking them up in mass.
Now, Andrew, we saw videos of you eating tacos and junk food, and also I expect you to walk into the office now with zits all over your face. But tell us a good story. Give us your best story from Mexico City.
My best story from Mexico City. That's going to be a tough one. Look, we did go to what was billed as the best barbacoa joint in the city the day of the game, and we watched the Real Madrid Atletico Madrid Champions League tie there. And let me tell you, when Chicharito scored that goal, the place went up in let's just say they were happy. There were a lot of screams, a lot of yells. That was a pretty special moment, one of those that you think, boy, this happened just perfectly. But I will say that the street meet was one of the highlights. There were people outside of our apartment making it. We nearly picked up some extra tacos there about 4 a.m. as we left for the airport this morning. But I think just to see the hustle of the city was the most special thing to me. I mean, you can just tell that the people are on the grind 24/7. Everybody's on the move. It's packed. It's crowded. It's loud. It stinks in places like any big city will. You could just feel the life in Mexico City. And I was in the cab on the way to the airport this morning. I was thinking to myself, how can I ditch Simon and David and go live here? Because it was that good. So
it does
I will certainly be back. And I encourage everyone to go. And I encourage everyone to ditch you too as well. So
it does sound. You love it so much. You might want to pack your bags and head out there, Andrew.
My bags are packed. I can turn right around. I'm at JFK right now.
All right, Andrew. Well, look forward to having you in the office whenever you decide to show up again. And I'll pass on the reins of the show back to you whenever that is. You keep going, doing your traveling around. And Montreal next up for you. But thank you for a few minutes. Get home safe.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Well, if there's one thing, David, that I take away from the game is that I don't feel like the spirits of America were crushed at all. And this is getting greedy, but you almost wish that the result would have impacted them more. Even in the post game, I read some of the reports. They're not fazed by America.
And some of the football MLS people here were telling us that people in Mexico are saying if they play the way they did yesterday, they should win it. You know, you said Di Benedetto just didn't have his day. Quintero just didn't have his day. Rather than say Montreal did something to throw these guys off and Montreal is good enough. I personally, I'm a U.S. national team fan. We face Mexico a lot. Mexico always thinks they're better than us, and they always expect to win. And when they don't say, oh, they were better. They say they start pulling at strings. And I expect that if the result goes against them in the next game, that we'll see a lot of that as well.
Well, we'll talk more Mexico, this one, the U23 variety, because they face the U.S., and we'll get into that a little bit later. But coming up next segment, Dan Gargan of the L.A. Galaxy joins us, and it's always a fun conversation speaking with Dan. That's after the break on SiriusXM Channel 94, MLSsoccer.com.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at MLSsoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
What up, guys? It's Chris Seitz with FC Dallas, and you guys are listening to Extra Time Radio.
Back on Extra Time Radio, and one of our very literate.
What?
Literate intros, music-wise.
Yeah, I think so.
California, because we're having Dan Gargan, who's in California with the LA Galaxy.
Also, this song came on this morning while I was coming to work, and I like this song. So
now, you live in the city.
Yeah.
How is the song coming on?
I'm listening to it in my headphones.
On your headphones? Yeah. It's on your iPod.
I have the ability to transport music while I'm moving. It's amazing.
We're going to talk to Dan Gargan about the New York Red Bulls versus LA Galaxy matchup. That's one of the best ones of the weekend, 5 Eastern on ESPN2 and ESPN Deportes. That's on Sunday. But we have 5 national TV games this weekend. There are the 2 on Friday, Viernes de Futbol on UDN, Univision Deportes. And that starts with 8 o'clock, Chicago Fire versus New York City FC. That's 8 Eastern. And the Colorado Rapids against FC Dallas, that's 10 Eastern. Colorado have been part of some fun games here in the last couple of weeks.
And those games are on UDN, not Unimas.
It's the start of 5 straight weeks of doubleheader on Friday night on UDN, which is a great way to kick off the weekend. Then the national TV games, then on Sunday, and I mentioned to you already, New York, LA, 5 Eastern, ESPN2, ESPN Deportes. Then we move to Fox Sports 1, which will have 2 games. The first one, Orlando City versus Toronto FC at 7 Eastern, followed by Seattle-Portland, one that will cap the weekend at 9:30 Eastern, again on Fox Sports 1 and Fox Deportes. So I love that the games are staggered. That's the way I want the weekend to go when it comes to games. We do obviously have games overlapping on the Saturday night, but I want to start with the Orlando-Toronto game. We walked into the studio, David, and you said, that's a must-win.
I think that
Orlando at home, Toronto on a 4-game losing streak.
I think that idea is out there amongst the fans, which is where it came from.
Week 8, and you're calling it a must-win.
I think
26 weekends left.
Yeah, of course, and 90% of the teams make the playoffs. I think that Orlando, it's big for them. They haven't won a home game yet. It's tough for fans to come out, and you just haven't won in front of them. I think that that's a big thing for them. Anyone who thinks Toronto FC has to win this game, I think, is a little bit crazy just because of the way their schedule laid out with the stadium, that they couldn't play at home, that they're bringing a few pieces together and the international players that they were missing at times.
You know, it was interesting. Greg Vanney brought that up during the week. He was asked about the start, obviously, and he said he went and looked back at the 3 teams prior to Toronto FC who had to start on a long road trip because of their stadium construction or renovation. And he said they all went on to have great seasons.
Well, think about KC and Sporting Park. I mean, they went roaring through the second half of the season when that happened. And I expect something similar to happen in Toronto. But Orlando needs to show their fans a little bit something. They got the red card last game, which really ruined that game for them. And Columbus Crew is the type of team that's going to take advantage of the extra space on the field that you give them. They need to turn things around, though. They need to get some positive results at home.
There are players who could be returning to the field. One is for D.C., the long-awaited return of Fabiana Spindola, who I would argue was their best player last year in 2014. He was obviously suspended for the first 6 games of the season. He will be back. D.C. go to Vancouver, not the easiest of matches. Vancouver leading the league. That's at 10:30 Eastern on Saturday. Fabiana Spindola, because of how important he is to this team, he slots right in, right?
Well, I was going to ask you what you say. He's obviously going to play, but do you start him? It's not an injury layoff. You know, he's in shape. There's nothing to worry about. Or is it Russ right. that
so
you
I
worry
think
about?
You just throw him in there.
And you go
him
90,
and Luis Silva.
And you go 90 or you just watch him and you just decide as the game goes along.
I don't think you can go 90 in his case. He's such an important player. I think you want to introduce him slowly. So I could see him coming off. I mean, it depends on this game situation, obviously.
And going to Vancouver, tough game. But DC, 11 points. They've played one more than New York, but they're tied for first in the East. Without who you said was their best player last year, they're tied for first. I mean, does that put them in that conversation with New York and Vancouver as the best teams in MLS, considering what they've done without him?
I think New York and Vancouver, though, their play has been better. So DC, I think, has to do more still. And this is probably unfair because people say, look at the results, look at the points. But I think they still have to probably do a little more on the field and really take over games and soundly beat opponents
now
for people to take them seriously.
This was what the comments that we heard throughout last year with DC was. It felt like they were kind of just getting their way along, but they eventually finished first in the East. At what point does that become your style? Where maybe you don't dominate games, but after 2 years of being a top two team in the East, is that just the way you
that
play?
That can't last. I mean, it can't. To me, it's not sustainable. So I'm curious to see if they can do it again here in 2015. We go to the other Saturday games are New England RSL, 7:30 Eastern on MLS Live, Houston, Kansas City, 8:30 Eastern on MLS Live, Columbus, Philly, 7:30 Eastern MLS Live, and then the Vancouver, D.C. we told you about, those games happening on Saturday. Now to the Sunday game, Seattle, Portland. This feels a little funny right now. Seattle really, I think, haven't taken off. Portland, you think they're just getting going. They beat New York City FC on the road. I don't know that they played well.
Huge.
I think they needed the magic from Darlington Nagbe. He provided them a moment of magic. They got the goal from Dairon Asprilla. But it comes at an interesting moment. I think the team that wins this game could then, you know, pick up the momentum now to run off a streak.
Imagine a two-week stretch for Portland where they get their first win of the season. Maybe they pick up a point on the road against Seattle. Diego Valeri returns to the team, and they say Will Johnson's going to play for Timbers too. I mean, the emotional boost there for the fan base as well as for the team to say, hey, you know what? Yeah, no, it's okay. You know, there are no must wins 6 weeks into the MLS season. We're fine, and now everything's going to start going our way. It would be a huge result for Portland. I don't know if Caleb Porter will do it, but I wouldn't be surprised to see them maybe sit back a little. We know
just
that,
like they did against New York.
Yeah. So I wouldn't be surprised. I think that's the game plan that you go with. Make Seattle try and come out and play you and break you down and see if you can get something on the break. And I think a point here would be huge. I don't think they need to go and stretch themselves for three.
But to kick off that Sunday of soccer, Soccer Sunday is New York Red Bulls against the LA Galaxy. This is a good one. The New York Red Bulls, I argue, best team in MLS against the champions, the LA Galaxy. That's on ESPN2 and ESPN Deportes 5 Eastern. And on the line with us to talk a little about this game, maybe get a little trash talk going, is the right back for the LA Galaxy, Dan Gargan. Dan, thanks for joining us.
Simon, thank you for having me. Lovely to be on with you, gentlemen.
Dan, I'm going to start you off with this. Benny Failhaber, Sporting Kansas City midfielder, one of the other veterans in the league, said this today about Real Salt Lake in a press conference. I never liked Salt Lake. Quote, the team I hate the most. I think they're snobby. They think there's something special. Now, L.A., New York, it's at Red Bull Arena, but I know you were doing some video work for Rachel Bonetta here and MLS Now, I believe, and you were trying also to drum up some rivalry here with L.A., New York. Give us some strong comments along those lines about the Red Bulls. Go ahead.
Some strong comments. Starting me off with a layup here, Simon. We were just doing some content pieces, I think, just more for entertainment than anything else. But I tried my hardest to pull some stuff out of the guys. You know, what I found out, which was afterwards for a couple of guys in the locker room, which wasn't brought up on the video, was that it's a pretty easy discussion about which side's better because we win championships in L.A., which I thought was some fighting words. That didn't make it to the video, but I felt like the discussion kind of starts and ends there, doesn't it?
We got a scoop here. I feel like that quote is going to be running places ahead of this game on Sunday. Bruce Arena is going to love you, Dan.
It could.
Dan,
I mean, facts are facts.
Is there a team specifically in the league that maybe rubs you the wrong way?
I think there are teams out there. I think we have a pretty good good rivalry going on with Seattle right now. I think it's fair to say that we don't like them and they don't like us. I don't think that's any revelation. Back in the day, I never really cared for the Houston teams. They were always, they played a tougher brand of soccer. So, and they felt so like they kind of walked around like their stuff didn't stink. So I would say those are two teams that I've kind of always had a bit of a distaste for.
But Dan, going back to the Red Bulls, I feel there's more ground we can cover there. You're a Philly guy, so you you hate New York more than anyone in that locker room.
Yeah, well, I was born hating New York, so that hasn't changed. Just because I live in LA, I grew up in Philly, so to have a strong disliking for New York is like putting your shoes on in the morning. It just happens.
but seriously speaking, Dan, I think every game against every opponent has a different feel to it. So what does it feel like when LA and New York Red Bulls get together? I mean, there have been historic games, and people remember a lot of the games, and including the playoffs that have happened over the years. But what does it feel like on the field?
Yeah, well, I think they're obviously two of the biggest markets. I think the league has placed a lot of emphasis on New York and LA being successful, and I think that they both organizations have gone out of their way to try and spend money and do the right things to be successful. Obviously, I think LA has probably had a little bit more success than New York has in a lot of those departments. But last year was my first LA New York game, and we had Thierry Henry, arguably one of the best players ever to play the game, going up against Robbie Keane, who's arguably the best foreign signing this league has ever made. So, I think that there is some star power that usually is associated with these games. There's also two big markets, so you have, bigger fan bases that are interested in these games. And I think, it's easy for the rest of the country to kind of latch on to a matchup like New York, LA.
Now, an added element this year is the New York Red Bulls, the only undefeated team right now in Major League Soccer. You guys are going into their house this weekend. Is there maybe a little bit more grit or maybe an opportunity that you guys are relishing to be the first ones to knock them off?
Well, I think that, first and foremost, it's a big game for us because we're starting to play better soccer. We're starting to pick up results where we need to pick up results. And this is a good measuring stick for us. That New York has been successful to start the season. They've changed their style of play with a couple big pieces that they brought in or lost, however you want to look at it. A new coach and new philosophy. So I think that it's good for us to kind of look at this game as more of where we've come, what we're still working on, what we need to do better, and where we can go from here, because they are playing well and it'll be a tough matchup for us.
And look, another wrinkle to this game is the fact that Bruce Arena, your head coach, was a head coach of the New York Red Bulls, and that was a stint that didn't work out so well. Probably the one blemish in the entire Bruce Arena career. So you got to believe he's up for it. But speaking of Bruce Arena, I'm interested, Dan, in the call you got from Bruce Arena. When you left the San Jose Earthquakes in 2013, I don't know that many thought that you'd be back in the league. Based on how that went, and then you get the call from Bruce Arena. I'm just curious how that went. What was said on that call?
Yeah, I had a very honest discussion with Bruce, and LA was somewhere after having played in the league for quite some time and been a part of some not so successful teams. With a little bit of maybe direction that wasn't sorted out all the time. I wanted to play and challenge myself with a winner and with a top class organization. And I think that, you know, Bruce respects that. You know, he respects a good work ethic. And, you know, I talked to him about what I could bring to the table and what I felt like I still had left to give. And, you know, by no means did I feel like my career needed to be ending. And you know, I whether or not he had the same vision for what I was able to contribute as I did, you know, you'd have to ask him that. But, you know, I saw myself coming down here to LA and being a big piece of this team because, you know, you got to have confidence in your own abilities. And, you know, I felt like this was somewhere where I could fit in.
I look at you and I look at Bruce Arena and I see possibly kindred spirits, just personality-wise. You guys both are eccentric. You like to have a good time. You like to come, you know, with the quick one-liners. Am I wrong about that? Are you guys similar in a lot of respects?
Well, he's got a lot more success in the back of his pocket than I do. So if I get to 60 years old and I have a similar career that he's had, I'd be happy to be compared to Bruce.
And are you thinking maybe about coaching?
You know, I don't know. I'm thinking right now about having another couple successful years on the field, and then we'll see where we go from there. It's something that interests me, but there's a lot of parts of this game and this business that interests me. So I'm not too sure about where that next step is, but I'm also not necessarily thinking about that wholeheartedly just yet.
Talking about off the field, we've seen a lot of your artistic work. You describe yourself as an amateur artist. What does that mean?
It means there's a lot more talented people out there that do it for a living.
And what's some of the stuff that you've been working on? What's some of the stuff maybe people have seen you do?
Well, you know, we have a great kind of communications and PR department here that allows me to kind of get involved. So I'm doing another match poster this year, which I thought was a cool project last year. I just did a couple customized skateboard decks for our foundation. So they had some longboards, typical, you know, Cali brat thing. I think we'll auction them off at one of the home games and donate that money to the foundation. So that was a cool project. One of my buddies, Connor Casey, and I have a clothing line, Royal Estate. So we have some stuff, some new tees and sweatshirts coming out this summer, which we're pretty excited about. So we, you know, just stuff to kind of keep your mind off the game and you know, give you a bit of an escape.
And you said you're Philly born, but you dropped your Cali bra in there. Longboarding. Are you a Cali guy now? Have you fully converted over?
I don't know if I've fully converted over, but I am a firm believer in immersing yourself in the culture in which you live in. And California is certainly a long way away from Philadelphia. So I'm trying to embrace the culture. You know, I'm really struggling. I live like two blocks from the beach. And I've got myself a longboard and a surfboard, and I'm trying my hardest to assimilate.
You can get some of Dan Gargan's stuff, the artwork on T-shirts, sweaters, at royalestate.com. That's Royal, EsteiGht.com. But, Dan, are you a self-trained artist? Did you go to school for it?
I took a lot of classes in high school, and then I have a minor in studio art from Georgetown. So it was something that I've kind of just been interested in for a long time. I enjoy it. And it's, you know, kind of just a further expression of something to kind of just keep that enjoyment going, you know, trying to stay involved in the art world. I love, you know, going to the museums and following current artists and seeing what they're doing. It's just, it's a hobby of mine.
Because we like to trash talk here, Breck Shea, also an artist. Go ahead, tell us. You're the better artist than Breck Shea. Go ahead, say it.
No, I would not say that. I can't. I would never, as an artist, say that I'm better than any other artist. That's like the first rule of art.
Very good.
It's all in the eye of the beholder.
Dan, do you come across a lot of guys in locker rooms who are into art like that they're artists themselves?
No, I don't know if I would come say that there's a lot of guys that are into art, but I know that, you know, a lot of guys have different passions outside of the locker room. Some guys are into that kind of stuff. Some guys are into the music scene. Some guys, you know, they all have their own passions. And I think that it's important to, you know, while we are fully invested in bettering our craft and, you know, doing our homework outside of the field, you know, a lot of that is maintaining a lifestyle that kind of promotes our ability to be as successful as we can on the field. So, you know, wherever that takes you, there is a lot of time that you need to be doing other things. And kind of, I think that getting your mind off of soccer from time to time is a huge help to your success on the field as well.
Now, Simon likes to go straight to trash talk and a little bit of animosity. I'm going to go with the loving side of things right now. Last night, we had the CONCACAF Champions League first final. Everyone's talking hashtag MLS for Montreal. Around the league for players, were you guys watching? Are people really, the players in the league, really rooting for Montreal?
Of course. I think so. I was personally. I know that a lot of the guys in the locker room were watching the game. I think everyone, you know, wants to see a positive result. You know, I think that the result that they got was a good one. If you said we'll go into Azteca, Montreal will go into Azteca and come out with a 1-1 draw, I think everybody would have signed on that dotted line and been, hell yeah, that's a big time result for them. You know, obviously America had a few chances in the second half to maybe open that game up a little bit, but you know, you can go the other side of things and they should have been playing down the man in the first half, you know, no question about it. So, you know, they still have a tough road ahead of them because America is a very good team and they'll be tough to play against in Montreal. But I think, you know, what Montreal proved last night is that they're a tough side as well. You know, they were compact, they were organized, they had a game plan, they stuck to it, and they, you know, they almost pulled off the victory. So, you know, I think as a league and as players in this league, I think we really feel like we are a lot better than we get credit for. And we have a lot of good sides and a lot of good players in this league, and it's a tough league to play against. So I think that, you know, for any opportunity that we have to, you know, show, especially the Liga MX or whoever that we can compete. I think that, you know, outside of head to head, we're all for MLS teams being successful abroad.
Dan, that was fun. You can catch Dan Gargan right back for the LA Galaxy this Sunday on ESPN2 and ESPN Deportes, 5 Eastern. They take on the New York Red Bulls. You can catch him on Twitter at @HeyDanGargan, and you can catch out his artistic work at royalestate.com. That's EST EIGHT. Dan, we had some fun on this call, but before we let you go, we know you're Philly, we know you're LA, and you're supposed to hate New York, but when you come to New York, what is it you try to do in the day and a half that you have in town?
Well, I mean, Manhattan's a fantastic city. It's, you know, clearly one of the best in the world. So I got to get a bagel. I'll probably get a slice of pie somewhere in there. You know, and maybe take in a little culture. It's got plenty of it there, so I'm excited to get into the city.
Little gallery somewhere, or is that what you do?
Yeah, it's a possibility. You know, we'll see. We'll have to see when we train on Saturday, but maybe the MoMA. You never know.
Great. If you run into Dan Gargan, say hello to him. Dan, thank you for your time. We appreciate it.
Cool. Thanks, guys. Good chatting with you.
Thanks, Dan. So we like to do our research ahead of interviews like that, and a note just gets into my inbox here after the interview that he has a baby girl named Golden Gargan. That's totally an artist's daughter's name.
It is. Apple.
Too bad we couldn't we didn't get a chance to ask him about that. But back to Gargan for a second here. I feel the longer you stick around, the longer people take you for granted.
Okay.
And I believe he's one of those veterans because he's been around, because he bounced around a few times, that I think the league, those who follow the league, take him for granted. But I would put him among the top 5 right backs in MLS. And in that group, to me, right now, today, I have Rafael Ramos of Orlando, probably number 1.
Mm-hmm.
I like what he's done, aside from
the red card.
Alvis Powell of Portland, Kofi Sarkodie of Houston, and Victor Cabrera I like the new guy from Montreal. He didn't play in the Champions League game. Or do we agree? Dan Gargan, top five?
Well, right I have guy? Sean Franklin on that same list. So I have the guys that you said.
I think
plus
Sean Franklin and Stephen Bateshore, I think, are on the same on par with Dan Gargan.
Look, I actually think both of them are better players than Dan Gargan, not because I think they both do a little bit more. I think all
what
three of them
do?
Are solid.
What do they do more?
I think all three of them are solid defenders. I think Sean Franklin's the best of the three
okay,
going
but
forward.
Why? Help me out.
Because I think that he's very good in the attack because he's pinpoint on his crossing. And he does well connecting with players in good 1-2s, giving
Dan
goes.
Dan Gargan doesn't?
I think that...
He totally does.
I think that...
Pay attention to him.
Hey, can I get a
go
word
ahead,
out?
Yeah.
I think, first of all, Franklin does it on a team with less a dangerous attacking options, so there's more focus on him than there is on a Dan Gargan when he's playing on a field with a Landon Donovan, a Robbie Keane, will be with Gerrard, has been with Donovan, guys like that. So I think that gives the... boost a little bit to Franklin. I think he's more of an outlet for his team. He's more of a necessity. And he doesn't play across a Robbie Rogers who's also bombing down the wing and taking away a little bit of that pressure.
I disagree. I think Franklin has actually been a bit of a non-factor this year and even to some extent last year. And maybe I didn't pay enough attention to him, but I think I've seen him make more of a difference when he was at the Galaxy in his Galaxy days. And impact games than I do with DC. Let us know who your top five right backs are, or your top right back in the league.
I will say, though, in talking about this and thinking about it, there's an odd thing that's happening, which is it's always been right backs, especially in Major League Soccer, especially with the U.S. national team. There's a strong, I think, group of left backs right now in the league compared to right backs, which I think is something kind of new. You have Waylon Francis and Robbie Rogers, and there's a few good players, I think, playing in that position now. Rather than Roy Miller, although people will be up in town about him.
And one more observation, though, sticking to the right backs. Of my top five, how many are American?
Yeah, I know. That's
not,
what I was thinking,
too. Not
that
too. Many anymore.
You
huh?
came out with Ramos and Cabrera off the bat.
And Powell. Let us know who your top right back is. You can get us on Twitter, at Extra Time Radio, or via email, extratimeradio@mlssoccer.com. We're going to come back after the break with a mailbag and a discussion. Someone tells us how you should celebrate a goal. Coming up after the break.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime@mlssoccer.com or tweet at Extra Time Radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Hola, les habla su amigo William Yarbrough, portero del Club León y de la selección de Estados Unidos. Y estás escuchando Extra Time Radio.
Back on Extra Time Radio, Sirius XM Channel 94, MLSsoccer.com. Final segment of the show. And tell me if this is psycho behavior, David. Fantasy team, I want a great run, as you can attest from anyone who's in the Extra Time Radio League. I went to pick up my daughter last Thursday. It was cut off, and it was 6:48. Cut off was 7 o'clock. Mm-hmm. So I grab her, and we race towards the nearest cafe. And I had to buy $12 worth of food because $10 is the cutoff for using credit card, and I don't carry cash. And I just handed my daughter the credit card. I said, just buy whatever. And, you know, she's just turned 9. But I was worried about the fantasy team.
And
I'm
you had a good
I've reached that level.
You've had a good you had a good fantasy week?
Yeah, I did an excellent job.
That is that is psycho behavior. That is psycho behavior. I'm just letting you know.
You don't do it because your fantasy, where are you at?
I just won my last two games and I'm on a really good flow right now.
Are you?
Yeah.
Really?
I'm LA Galaxy.
The fantasy cutoff this week is on Friday night, 8 o'clock. That's the first game of the week, Chicago, New York City FC on UDN. Another piece of news for MLS fans, tickets to the AT&T MLS All-Star Game have gone on sale. Go on MLSsoccer.com. You can find how to get your hands on those. And a piece of news that struck us this morning, David. Thierry Henry, ex-Red Bull star, to me, author of some of the smuggest, most snobby celebrations in MLS history, ones that we made fun of, the Henri-ing, you remember. He took it out on Chicharito. Weeby was telling us how Chicharito scored a goal that all of Mexico celebrated, but he had an issue with it.
Well, he says, I know he went on to celebrate alone and everything, but he can thank Ronaldo. he being Chicharito. For me, he has to. That is, for me, Ronaldo's goal. What I don't like after the goal is it seems like he won the World Cup with his celebration. Turn around and celebrate with Ronaldo.
And what do you think about that?
I mean, I understand respecting the pass, and Ronaldo sets him up on a plate to score that, but you just won that tie for you to go to the Champions League semifinal against your inner city rival in an intense game after Chicharito missed about three or four sitters.
He hasn't been starting.
And he hasn't been playing.
But what strikes me about the guy making the comment on Ri is not only the fact that he didn't always go back and thank the guy who gave the assist. He did it more often than not. But he's also Mr. Cool. And it's not cool to question the guy's celebration. I just don't know how. And now he's in the media world. I guess he's going to have to now cross over into stuff that's maybe not so cool. But from one goal scorer to another, Jordan Morris scores again. He's on a hot streak for the U.S. under-23s this time.
Against Mexico.
They call him the Mexicutioner. but he is... he scores again. He looked good in this U23 game. Andy Herzog, the coach of the U23, says he is going to be a starter together with Mario Rodriguez, and he looked good. And during the broadcast, they said that he was reminding the broadcasters of Landon Donovan. And I was thinking about that. I think that comparison is fairly on
early Landon Donovan.
Spot on. Huh?
Early Landon Donovan. A guy who just
But you told me Brian McBride the other day. I'm
no,
like,
that's
what?
Well that and we actually have a tweet from a Brian Clay who says as well that he thinks he looks like
really?
Brian McBride to him. Maybe his ability in and around the box.
His
to me,
cheekbones maybe, but not his play.
To me, he has a little Domodoro in his game right now, which is unbelievable speed but a touch that can be 18 yards long at times, and he's just going to have to build on it.
We spoke goals and celebrations.
Yeah,
let's
Joe Clay tweeted,
go ahead.
Tweeted to us, Piatti getting the yellow card for pulling the jersey over his head and showing that he loved his grandfather in front of everyone. And Joe Clay says, when will refs stop penalizing players for celebrating goals? Who besides refs dislike them?
Yeah, so you're talking about the celebration.
Yeah,
getting
and
a
the
yellow.
CCL.
And it's in Law 12, the laws of the game. You remove your shirt or you cover your head with your shirt. It's a yellow card after a goal, a celebration. It's about sportsmanship.
Yeah, it seems so childish to me that allow him to celebrate and it's fun. And if your fear is that the other team's going to get upset, then they need to be adults because they're professional soccer players.
How about we come up with more creative ways to celebrate? Huh? That might be a way to
go.
So
that's your fix.
Instead of depending on written stuff on
your
shirt.
We'll
find another way.
And then when we find a new way, they'll ban that.
Hand signals,
right?
Something.
And then when they do that, though, then they'll ban that. Well, they have the hands hearts.
Well, do something else with your hands. that's all we have for this show. For David Goss, who goes on vacation, I'm Simon Borg. You've been listening to Extra Time Radio on MLSsoccer.com, SiriusXM Channel 94. Catch you next time.